I did yoga for a long time, like 5 years, and I can still touch my toes without bending my knees.
Oh yeah,
which is pretty good for a man of my advancing age.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I think actually as a foundation, I think yoga would be good for anybody, right? Yeah,
it's good for your core.
Yeah, and it's good for also mind, like in terms of like, you know, just calming yourself and stuff like that. So
it's 90 minutes where you only focus on not falling over or passing gas.
It's 90 minutes?
Well, sometimes.
Oh, fuck.
An hour.
I thought I was like...
It's an hour.
Yeah, I was thinking 20 minutes.
But you can, you know, and at the end you get to have you get to lie down.
Yeah.
And breathe.
All right, welcome to the podcast. Hanging out with my friend Bob, News Bob, Bob Sumner. Thanks, how you doing, man?
Feeling pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I saw you on social media the other day, and I had to talk to you because, A, we haven't chatted in so long.
Yeah.
But, B, you just did a fitness challenge.
Yeah.
And I've been doing a lot of kind of fitness challenges and trying to stay healthy. So I wanted to kind of learn a little bit more about what you were doing. So let's just start with that.
Yeah.
Like, how did, what was the inspiration? What was the challenge?
Well, I'll take my hat off to you because I was watching what you were doing. Mindfulness and focused days.
Yeah. Then
I joined the Trico Center last year when I was 307 pounds.
Wow.
And so it's been a process over the last year. I was down to 240. Now I'm up a little bit higher, but it's mostly muscle weight.
Right.
But then at the start of this year, start of February, just before my 65th birthday.
Yeah.
There was a 40-day challenge put up. And if you did 40 days in a row, you know, combined with, you could do bonus extra fitness to earn a star or a day off if you like.
But
I made 36 out of 40 days. And I just wanted to do this because, you know, a lot of things have changed. I've turned 65. I think that you put me onto that book, Younger Next Year.
Yeah.
It kind of opens your mind up to what the body's capable of.
Totally.
And just coming from what I came from, I thought, it's time for me to try and get healthier because I saw my dad leave, my uncle, and a good friend of ours. And it just kind of gives you that, okay, I better do something about this or I'm going to be on the wrong side of the grass too early.
Yeah.
Not that those guys did anything wrong, but just... It was an inspiration for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see myself getting old. I knew I was getting older, but I thought I've always had a youthful exuberance to my approach to life, as you know, Mark.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to keep that. And when I was big and overweight, I was sick. Like I was on my way to a bunch of bad things.
Right.
So I just wanted to turn it around. And so I'm still 65 and I'm not on any kind of pharmaceuticals or anything. And I'm healthy. I'm not drinking as much.
Yeah.
But, you know, I haven't walked away
from it. This is water.
Yeah, we're drinking water right now, which is good. But, you know, I'm feeling good. I'm just looking ahead to the next 5 years to see what life's going to bring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, and that book that book was suggested to me by a doctor just to read. And I really enjoyed that book, Younger Next Year, because I think, and whether it's something we convince ourselves of or something that we are told, however it works, we just think there's like this something you have to accept as you age. And you know, what you can realize is that you really don't have to accept that. And you can, if you use your body will respond, your body will be healthier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. And even in the book, you know, it says, well, someday you're going to age, but why don't you get there gracefully and, you know, healthfully.
And then just be done.
And then you're,
you know what I mean?
You don't have to crash into the
fence
post like I was on my way to.
Yeah.
So, you know, it feels way better.
Yeah.
The whole change.
So I'm curious about the weight change or the weight loss, because I find losing weight to be very difficult.
Yeah.
And I'm always that guy who needs to lose 10 pounds. You know what I mean? And then I'll fluctuate. I'm sure everybody has that weight that they kind of fluctuate at. So for you to go from, say, 300 plus to 240,
yeah,
that What did you do? Like, how do you do that? Because that's not easy to do.
No, and it was the first, when I first decided, oh, I got to do this. So, as you know, we all get to go to restaurants and parties. And so I just said, you know, I'm just going to not drink to start. So I went a month and I was like, oh, this is great. I feel great. And I was watching the weight come off. And then I started eating less. Like, I don't have to eat the whole ribeye. I can eat half of it. I don't have to eat the whole pizza. I can have two pieces and that fills me up.
Yeah.
And walking away from it. And then the mindful exercise and just more water.
Yeah.
It just changes your life. And then, it's been a long journey. I was a smoker for a long time.
Right.
So I think my body finally recovered into a space where it wanted to be, where it probably should be.
Yeah.
At this age.
Yeah.
And, it was like 13, like quitting smoking takes a long time, but it's one of the best things you can do.
Yeah.
But it was a process. And I'm not a doctor or anything. I've talked to a few doctors about it, and it's a process, and your body needs to heal. And then all of a sudden, I could lose weight, and I'm not sick or anything. I had all my blood tests done and everything.
Right.
It was just a gift, and I think it was a thought process for me. So it's a combination of less alcohol, less food, and exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, how long were you a smoker for?
Oh, a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I started when doctors used to prescribe it to make you calm.
Yeah. Dude, you need a cigarette, man. Yeah. Chill the fuck out.
Camels. But well, you're not allowed to do that. But I think I was probably in the 70s.
Yeah.
And I quit, in 13 years ago.
Yeah. So what made you quit?
I couldn't do the sports that I wanted to anymore.
Right.
Because I used to be like the Guy Lafleur, not Guy Lafleur, but like those guys, they'd smoke on the bench, right?
Yeah.
And I'd finish playing hockey, and I was always pretty fast. And I'd have a smoke after, and I was like, this is great. But then it got to a point where I couldn't skate up the ice anymore.
Right.
And I was like gasping for breath, and I was like, okay, this sucks. And then it came down to I needed a new truck, and I couldn't afford to do both. So that was my motivation.
Yeah.
One of them was health, but the other one was I needed a new truck.
Yeah.
So cigarettes had to go, because at that point
they were... To make payments.
Yeah, they were $300 a month if you wanted to buy cartons. I think they're way more than that now. But it was a choice, right? So it was a motivation.
Yeah.
And I read a book about how to quit smoking, and it worked. And so lucky again. I feel blessed that I've been able to do these things with a bit of mind power.
And was it, because I feel like, smoking, like when you're talking about like playing hockey and having a cigarette after, it's kind of like funny, and you can kind of challenge yourself. Oh, yeah, I can still smoke and still out skate you and all that. It's kind of one of those things where it's funny until it's not funny anymore.
And that's what it was. Yeah. It wasn't funny anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like painful. It was painful, and I could just feel it. I was starting to gasp a little bit. So at that point, I was like, okay, if I don't quit now, I'm probably not going to see 60.
Yeah.
That was the other thing, right?
So yeah.
It was the beginning of that journey, Mark.
So a 40, actually, I'll ask you this in a little bit. Yeah. So I'm curious, though, about, so you were in media for a long time.
30 years.
Because I'm curious about health on, one of the things that and maybe I talk about it too much, but, when I started doing what is now Explorative 4, I was really thinking about it from the physical aspect of it. And then as I would talk to more people about, what I was doing to kind of challenge myself physically, people would ask, oh, what are you doing for your mental health? What are you doing for your spiritual health? Which I never really wanted to hear. I didn't really want to address those things. I was like, just fuck, I'll run every day and shut up. But I realized as I got further along that I had to address those things. You were in media for a long time and you're still in PR, but when you were, in the newsroom, when you were, going, chasing stories and all those sort of things, that's got to take a toll on you from a mental health perspective.
It does. And it's really good that you said that, because I used to talk to first responders and they'd go, how do you do this? And I'd go, well, how do you do it? Like, you get here before me.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just like one of those, you absorb so much. Mm-hmm. And I know I used to absorb it a long time and then it would all blow out.
Mm-hmm.
Because the news can be very negative. There's a lot of death and destruction. I saw a lot of mass murders in this city. Like things you don't really, a normal person shouldn't see.
Yeah.
Not that I'm normal. But
yeah.
But I had firefighter friends and police friends, and they'd always be like, well, how do you guys do this?
Yeah.
And I'd throw it back at them. And like, those guys go through a lot. I think I know when I left the newsroom, I wasn't finding Gallo's humor funny anymore. So I knew that was a sign. Mm-hmm. And I kind of crashed hard when I left.
Yeah.
Like I was like, oh man, 30 years I've been absorbing this.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was fun.
Yeah.
Like way fun. Like working with some of these old characters. But the murder side of it and the depressing side of it, it does take its toll.
It takes its toll. And, and especially, so in your 30-year career, you know, what was the evolution like? Because you didn't start, I'm guessing, in that 24-hour news cycle. No. So it just kept getting kind of crazier and crazier as your career went along. Yeah. So did it just kind of continue to build up then?
I think I remember the big, when I saw it change was the when the Gulf War broke out.
Yeah.
And our news crew stayed all night and did live updates.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, oh, I never heard of this. I've never seen this before. Like you'd see CNN would...
CNN. Starting then. I remember
this is all
that.
Before the internet, though, right?
Bernard Shaw.
That's right.
It's just like, yeah.
You're watching CNN.
Yeah. Yeah. That just became what you were watching all the time.
And so that it all started changing with social media and the internet and the 24-hour news cycle.
Yeah.
You know, we'd promote a news story starting on Monday. Tune in on Friday.
Yeah.
To watch the story. And now it's like, tune in on Twitter 30 seconds from now and we'll have this story, right? It's like instant.
Yeah.
And, you know, that whole business has changed so much. It's crazy now.
Is it something that, so when you left, was it a result of like burning out or was it just, you just knew that it was time to kind of move on?
I think I had one of the highest pressure jobs in a newsroom is like the assignment desk.
Yeah.
I think, and a lot of people agree with me, but I did that for almost 15 years in a row.
Yeah.
So it was fun and it was good for my brain because I could. You know, I had a matrix going on and all that. But you absorb things. You don't even realize you're absorbing them at the time because it's so fast-paced.
Mm-hmm.
So I just knew it was time to move on. Something in my head just said, no, you got to get out of this.
Yeah.
So I picked PR, and that's hardly any pressure at all.
So how do you then, did you, you know, because to your point earlier, you said, you know, you didn't know what you were absorbing, and then it would kind of come out. And I think that's what happens to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You think you can just keep absorbing this. We don't deal with our mental health. We can sit here and talk about, oh, yeah, I'm doing this for sit-ups. I'm doing this for physical health. But mental health, it's, you know, we keep just kind of absorbing it, and we don't have healthy outlets. Have you learned have you created healthy outlets, like when you look back and kind of the way you want to move forward?
Very much so. And I'm very aware of my mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if people want to talk about it, I'm totally open to it. Like I get depressed sometimes and it's just a process you go through, right? Some people need medication for it. I, a long time ago, used medication just to get through some stuff. But I find now that if I just exercise and stay focused and try not to get too bogged down in what's going on and realize that, you know, life is pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not as simple as that. I'm not simplifying mental health by any means, Mark, but I think you just have to be aware of it and then find outlets for it and deal with it. Because if you let it fester, it just gets worse.
And address it on a daily basis and know that, you know, some days are going to be, you know, some days you're going to wake up and you're not going to be 100%, and other days it's, you know, so, but being able to address it, I think, is really important. Yeah. What's your thought on physical health and mental health and the connection between the two?
Yeah, I think they go hand in hand because you need a focus, right? If you're going to go and hit the treadmill or run or, you know, you run. So you need a mental focus. You got to pick a target and you got to try and achieve that, right?
Yeah.
And you can improve every time you go.
Yeah.
Like I've noticed that my weights are going up just because but I decide to make that focus. I've got a lot of good support where I go. So it's just, I think overall it gives you a good mental, what's the word for it? It gives you that brush you need in your brain to regenerate.
Yeah.
And if you're sitting around not doing anything, I think that can build up. But overall, I think if you hit the gym, like I always tell my daughter, if she's down, I go, just go. I said, go work out, kid. It'll make you feel better. And I believe that. It's not the end all, but it certainly helps.
Yeah.
Like it's a part of the whole process, I think.
And it also just, you know, sometimes when you're in your own head, you need to just get busy doing something. Yeah. So it kind of gives you that kind of focus on something else. I know, you know, in years past, like when, you know, if I was living by myself or even, you know what, when I travel, I hate being in a hotel room by myself. It's just like, there's too much just like I like alone time, but sometimes you just need to get up and just do something,
it's
you
too
know?
Quiet.
Too quiet and too much. Yeah. So I think sometimes people, that's what physical fitness is for me. It's just, it gives you something to kind of like distract you.
Yeah.
I think of myself as a dog. I'm like, I need to walk myself every day. And if
burn
I
burn it off, right?
Yeah. And which I'm grateful that I still have that kind of energy and stuff like that. Like, if I don't, I'm scared to, like, not scared to go home, but like, I know that then my family is going to like have this like, you know, weird energy walking into the room kind of thing, you know? So.
Yeah, I know. My Diana always says, did you just start that story a minute ago inside your brain? I was like, yeah, I did.
Maybe. Yeah.
But what I found, especially working out with headphones.
Yeah.
I'm really into Rage Against the Machine right now.
Oh, really?
And it's like, it's angry, but it's like so energetic, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
I was never a heavy metal guy.
I was going to say that would not be. And what's funny is sometimes I'm listening to, because you never know what people are listening to.
No.
Like I'll be, sometimes I'm listening to like James Taylor or like, you know, who was I listening to?
Is that for a slow
Tracy
run?
Chapman, you know, as I'm like lifting weights and I'm like, cause I like to be like in a really calm state, you know, but, so Rage Against the Machine is not something I would have, pegged you for.
It's good when you're on a spin bike and you need to go to that extra step or, you know, on the treadmill and you, all of a sudden that's cranked up to a lot of miles an hour. You need that. But I don't know. I never even listened to them before. But all of a sudden, it just appears in my playlist. And so I don't know.
Your algorithm said, you know what? You need more.
You need
is Rage. So if you did a 40-day challenge.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'm always curious about is, so what's next when you do something like that? Because one of the things that I always struggled with was, you know, okay, I've completed a challenge. And you know, even I remember talking to my dad about this years ago. He hired a personal trainer. He got into really good shape, and then he was like, "Okay, I'm good now." And then he just went back to his lifestyle. And I'm like, I don't think it works like that. I think you need to just kind of maintain that as a lifestyle. So when you complete something like a 40-day challenge, what's your thought process now that you're done?
I'm still going to have my goal of 6 days a week,
okay,
which is recommended in that book. Right?
They said seven, but then they said people will get mad at you if you say seven. So they'll say, okay, fine, six.
So six is my goal.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's programmed into me. I drive home from work and I go. I have my bag in the truck and I just go.
Yeah.
And then you walk up and the counter's like, hey, Bob, good to see you again. And I'm meeting all these young people that are really encouraging. And, there's some people older than me that are the same age as me. And it's like, it's a community, right?
Yeah.
So I actually look forward to it. I go, I wonder who I'm going to see today and who's going to talk to me.
That's cool.
And what machines I can get on. And so it's like, I think it's just a habit you create.
Yeah.
So the 40 day was like, I want to do this.
Yeah.
But now I'm going to go, I'm going to try and go 6 days. Like the year before I went to the gym 278 times.
Right.
For, you know, that's pretty good.
That's great. That's fantastic.
So I'm hoping to get over that this year.
Yeah.
For 2024.
So you're one of those guys, you have a friendly demeanor. Yeah. People talk to you. No one ever talks to me at the gym. I don't come across as the guy that people think wants to chat.
I've met probably 40 people there that I really like talking to.
Yeah.
And about 10 I kind of try not to talk to, but whatever.
Yeah.
It's good, and I've got to know some people, like there's some old NHL guys there.
Yeah.
That, you know, I talked, oh yeah, I remember you guys.
Yeah.
And they're just kinda going about their business, but It's just a community, right?
Yeah.
It's like when we used to go and meet at that one brewery that's named after the mountains. And every Friday we'd be there, right?
Yeah.
And so now I'm like, I might go there on Sunday.
Yeah.
And give myself a reward. But I'm not going there Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Yeah.
Because it's just not, it's not a healthy thing.
Yeah, I know. You have to, and I always say, like, for me, you know, because again, going back to mind, body, soul is, you know, meeting up for beers to me hits that kind of that soul, that spirit kind of bucket list in terms of like, you know, there's nothing better than sitting around and bullshitting and hanging out and having a beer with friends. But you have to, you know, it's like anything. If the pendulum swings to the point where you're doing that too much, then you got to kind of look at yourself in the mirror a little bit, right?
Yeah. So it's all moderation.
Yeah.
And that, I think that was hard for me to learn that. Moderation. So, which on the other side of it, I'm not that moderation when I go to the gym.
Yeah. But
I am. Like, I'm not like a bodybuilder or anything.
Yeah.
I just want to get my heart rate up, get some muscle going. But, you know, like to your meeting for going for beers with friends, my wife and I on Sunday now, we go and have a beer on Sunday at 5 o'clock.
Oh, yeah.
And we just go and just like kind of, because we know the week's coming.
Yeah.
So it's nice. We go to a different one all the time.
Yeah. So do you go to different places?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I have my faves, right?
Yeah.
Like where you have friends. We still have friends there.
Absolutely, yeah. Man. Absolutely.
And my niece is now teaching beer yoga.
So where is that?
At Cabin.
Oh, nice.
So I go there and I don't go to yoga. I go work out and then I come meet him after and have a beer.
Yeah. You don't do yoga?
No, my wife does the yoga.
I'm trying to learn.
I love yoga.
I want to figure out how to do it. I figure that would be, good, for me.
Yeah.
I need to... I didn't grow up as a stretcher.
No, me neither.
So
I did yoga for a long time, like 5 years, and I can still touch my toes without bending my knees.
Oh yeah,
which is pretty good for a man of my advancing age.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I think actually as a foundation, I think yoga would be good for anybody, right? Yeah,
it's good for your core.
Yeah, and it's good for also mind, like in terms of like. You know, just calming yourself and stuff like that. So
it's 90 minutes where you only focus on not falling over or passing gas.
It's 90 minutes?
Well, sometimes.
Oh, fuck.
An hour.
I thought I was like...
It's an hour.
Yeah. I was thinking 20 minutes.
But you can, you know, and at the end you get to have you get to lie down.
Yeah.
And breathe.
So you're in PR now, right?
Yeah.
So, because you've had a long career, when are you ever going to retire? And what would you do when you retire? Do you ever think about that?
I always thought in my mind, and I still haven't changed this, I'd like to help poverty alleviation somehow, especially with kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I love it when I, like meal share is not around anymore, but that was great. That was a good few years of my life. It kept me, you know, in fact, I got to increase my network just by working with them or volunteering with them. And then, but every time we go to Brown Bagging for Calgary Kids, like they're so good, right? They feed like 5,000 to 6,000 kids lunch every day.
So and what are they about? Let me, because I have two kids and it drives me, it makes me, like, I don't know. The idea that kids can go to school without food makes me sad.
It burns me.
Yeah.
Because there's no reason for it. But did you ever meet Tanya and she's got the Nordegg executive retreat now?
No.
So she was a buddy of mine. I met her through gym actually. And so she was the exec director of Brown Bagging.
Yeah.
And they used to feed like 1,500 kids at lunch. And now it's like, I think I talked with the executive director now. And her name escapes me because I'm old. But they do like 6,000 lunches a day.
Every day?
Every day.
And is that in Calgary or what's in the Calgary. Scope there?
Yeah. In Calgary. But they're volunteer driven. They have some, you know, they have some paid positions. But it's mostly people go down to this kitchen and make sandwiches.
Yeah.
And fruit and...
Where do they do that? Do you know where they are?
In the Atco building.
Okay.
Yeah, in the original Atco building on 11th Ave.
Oh, okay. But that's like close to here.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And there's so many like other organizations in the city, but like Brown Bagging really stands out for me.
Yeah.
Because they impact every day.
Yeah. Every I'm like you, like kids, they can't necessarily help themselves, right? So you got to...
They're in a situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's another group in Ogden that started, but you know, they just went through that buy a loaf of bread at the Italian Center,
mm-hmm.
and they would buy a meal for a kid. So anything like that just resonates with me.
Yeah.
So.
No, I agree.
And even the food bank, they do amazing work over there.
Yeah.
So I'll probably end up somewhere down if I can help.
Yeah, absolutely.
Alleviate or elevate their message somehow.
Yeah.
Because I think I can elevate messages pretty good.
I think you're pretty good at that. You've made a career of that.
Yeah.
So speaking of the career, though, you mentioned, you had sort of commented that the media industry is changing. So, you know, having been in it for 30 years, looking at, you know, like, I guess let's just kind of walk through all of them. Because you were mostly in television.
Always television.
Okay. Yeah. So where is that now? Like, I'll give you an example. When I was a kid, I grew up in Red Deer and we had a local news station,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you could get the news, what was happening in and around Red Deer.
RDTV.
Right? and then that was gone like probably a decade or even more ago. Yeah,
I remember that.
And then, but I see that's kind of like that trend is just continuing. So where, you know, what's your thoughts on that? And then, what's the end point on that?
Well, I think like if you look at my generation, yours a little bit, the people behind us, like say 30 and younger, I don't think they go home and watch the news at 6.
Right.
Or the morning shows. They'll watch it on the internet if they're interested.
Yeah.
And so what I'm seeing is a lot of shift into digital platforms. Like we have a lot of friends that all just got downsized or right-sized.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all the radio stations are going into a syndicated network program.
Which format. And what does that mean?
It's like one person like broadcast from a central location and it goes out to everybody.
Like just across the country, and then they'd have kind of thing.
Local news breaks or whatever, if they are even a news station, but it's mostly like it's like, you know, it's music that's programmed.
See, what I don't, what doesn't make sense about that to me is because I remember years ago I had a truck and it had like satellite radio.
Sirius, yeah.
And I liked it for the first bit. And then I kind of started to miss, like there was no personal local content. And I was just like, there's nothing that was like kind of telling me what was going around in town. And maybe that is just because I'm, like whatever, I'm like 46 years old, and so maybe if someone was 25, they'd be like, who gives a shit what's going on? And but I don't know, I feel like there's a place for that, and I feel like I do give a shit. So as these things get syndicated, where did like that stuff just goes away?
Well, it's a good point because these people live in our community, and they like JD and Jesse, and Jerry Forbes before then, Grant, you know, all the guys I grew up with at 2 and 7 and CTV, they were like really involved in the community.
Yeah.
So you could invite them to come down to your festivals.
Yeah.
And everyone would go, hey, look, that's that guy from the TV station.
100%. Yeah.
And I think it still has that appeal to some people.
But
the younger generation is kind of more on TikTok, like what's going on there.
Right.
They're getting their news from really unreliable sources, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's not like when we were doing news, we'd have to get both sides of the story and with a bit of editorial. What changed was the big corporations came in and took over these companies.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just, the local thing is still there, but there's a lot of downward pressure from above to do news a certain way.
Right.
From a political standpoint, whatever.
Right. Yeah.
So your editorial, where it used to be the news director would say, let's do this story. And the managing editor would go, yeah, that sounds great. And then they go to the assignment desk and say, let's do all these stories. So I think a lot of it is like there's a lot of government PR that happens.
Right.
And we saw that during the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
Every day the lead story was, oh, here's the Jason Kenney and his crew telling us what we should do.
Yeah.
In the old days, we used to, you know, hold a little bit of a torch to the politicians. I think that still happens to some point, but their messaging is so controlled now that nothing really gets out of hand.
Yeah, which, like, so where are we going to get that as a, let's just say as a community or as a society, where are we going to get those people that are holding people to account? Because it used to be the, you know, the journalists that were doing these reports and stuff like that. And as those people are kind of, you know, downsized or whatever you say, is there an opportunity or is there a place that's going to kind of replace that and hold these people to account?
I have hope for the future because the journalism schools are still pumping it out.
Yeah.
The kids out, the young people. And there's, you know, if they have that thirst for knowledge and the truth, I have hope.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go. It's like so digital now that the world has changed. Like we even, you know, when the internet came in and everything changed, that was one of the reasons I left being a camera guy is because there was no more road trips.
Right.
Because it was all just like you could just phone someone in London and go, can you shoot this for me and then send it over? So it was a transition. That was a transition for me. That was a big transition.
That was the first kind of like you noticed the technology going.
Yeah, because I asked my boss at the time, I said, are the road trips going to go away? And he goes, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They already have in case you didn't notice.
Yeah, they're gone. So that was but now I don't know where it's going to go because you look around and the reporters are getting younger. You need to have experience to be experienced.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And because like even watching like sports.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, it used to be the same person on for, and so you had this like trusted, like, okay, I understand his or her depth of knowledge and I trust, where now it's just a talking head and it's kind of like, they're just, that, like, there's no depth, there's no relationship there, you know what I mean?
And the messages are very controlled, but, like,
yeah.
I worked enough NHL games, and I can tell you what a player's going to say before they say it.
Exactly.
Because they're just controlled. They don't want to get anyone into trouble,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I think if you let most pro athletes just say what they wanted to, it'd be a mess, right?
That'd be hilarious.
It would be awesome. Better.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just, it's very controlled.
Yeah.
And it's very national and corporate in nature.
Yeah.
It's probably the best way to say it.
Yeah.
That's why I like the Daily Hive, Darren.
Yeah.
Like, it's a local newspaper and he just doesn't really report to anyone but himself.
Right.
So he's a journalist, right? So not, you know, and it's a small crew, but they put out probably one of the better newspapers in the city.
Yeah.
And it's digital. You know, I watch Post Media. There's still some great reporters there, but there's a lot of young people that are like just trying to find their way. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that there's still some accountability and people that are going to,
What, and I know there's some great reporters at Global CTV Calgary. Like, there's some really good reporters there that, and they just need our support, right?
Oh, 100%. I think so. And how do you, like, because it used to be easier to support them in that, like you said, you'd watch the 6 o'clock news, you'd watch the morning shows. Those were kind of the staples growing up. And then, you know, like how do you support them now? Because even like the papers are, they're a fraction of what they were in terms of size, right? Like, it's just like what you're seeing versus, you know, the girthy Calgary Herald or Calgary Sun back in the day, right? So,
it's changed. So
how do you, you know, when you say support, you know, media, support, you know, that industry, how can we as consumers?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, sign up to their news alerts.
Yeah.
Like Global, I go to the Global webpage, I go to CTV's webpage, I go to CBC's, because I want information from a lot of different places just so I can make my mind up. But if you look at some of like like on Instagram, it's these things that are just stealing, they're stealing news.
Right.
And just reposting it because they're not journalists.
Right.
But I think a lot of the, if you look at the amount of people that go on there and engage, it's their form of information.
Yeah.
So if that's what you want, I guess that's where you go. But I like well thought out, constructed news, right?
Yeah.
For me. That's just me though. I hope other people would take that approach.
Yeah.
But maybe our life's too busy now.
Well, and the danger, and I think most people know, but you know, with algorithms, right, on the news that I'm getting fed is just feeding what they know I want to
that's
hear.
Right?
Yeah. Whereas before, I think there are, at least I had a sense when I was growing up that there was an effort to kind of give the different aspects of the story.
Yeah.
Do you think there's been a level of trust that's been lost in media? I don't know, but I'm thinking like over COVID, you know, eventually it becomes a narrative. It's like there's only like, here's the, and there's no one going, yeah, but what if that, you know, and immediately if you asked a question, you were completely ridiculed. You know what I mean? It was just like, if you're not towing the line, then you got to shut up. You know, whereas I feel like back in the day, there would have been reporters that would be intentionally being contrarian and being like, no, and being seen as doing their job as a result of being that way.
Like, I can give you a good example. And this is like when I was in the CTV newsroom and even Global, and every Thursday we would report the flu deaths across the province. And there was a 20-second voiceover, and we just move on.
Yeah.
And then the pandemic with COVID and everything just changed everything, because that was like 15, 20 minutes of every newscast.
Oh,
you got to get this, and don't go there, and the airports are closed, and
you
can't go here, and your food's got to be sent home, and you can't go to this restaurant. And it was a whole, I called it like government PR, because that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
You were just taking what the government said. But the whole, if you look at it, the whole country was swept up in it, right? The whole world was, really.
For sure, yeah.
But then when people started pushing back, and I, like, the people that were pushing back were maybe deemed a little bit kooky.
Yeah.
And probably some of them are, but they had an opposition. And then I started noticing that these protests in Calgary were just getting giant, and people were pushing back. So it was a weird time.
It was so weird,
It was weird.
Because for a little while, everyone was just like, kumbaya.
Yeah.
Everything was good.
Everyone went home.
It was just like, okay, let us out. We were supposed to be in for 2 weeks.
I saw an interview with a street preacher. I'm not going to say his name because I don't want to give him any energy. But when he got interviewed in the mainstream media, I went, oh, we're screwed.
Yeah.
But I mean, they were looking for that. To be fair, they were looking for an opposing viewpoint.
Right. Yeah.
Which is that's your job as a journalist, right? You don't just take that. You don't just take that one side. You go try and find another side.
Yeah.
And so by doing that, which is what you should do, you elevated. I got to be careful what I say here.
Yeah.
But you would elevate that side, right?
Yeah, you would give a perspective.
Yeah.
And then people could it seems like with you take, you know, if you want to call it government PR, you take people's algorithms that know exactly what they will click on. You know, we're being fed, you know, one side of the story and we're not necessarily realizing it because it's just like, oh, see, that article agrees with what I think and that article does. So you just think you're a really smart person. It must be right. Yeah. God damn, I'm smart and everyone agrees with me.
Well, then our lives are so fast and spinning too, right, Mark? So like that's totally why I'm really trying to take time just to stop.
Yeah.
And because if you're driving home and whatever, if you see something on your iPhone,
you're
absorbing that, right?
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, I wonder if that's even real or if it's true.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah. And so I don't know. I'm hopeful that the world will kind of correct itself too. And I think media hopefully probably is definitely reorganizing itself, right?
That's
a
good way to describe it. Yeah.
They're
trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
But they're in survival mode. I know that. Like I have a lot of friends.
The traditional ones are
inside. Yeah. And they're like, they're feeling it. But, you know, they're hanging in there and fighting and trying to do what journalists should do.
Yeah. So, no, that's good.
Yeah.
So today in your day-to-day life, and it doesn't have to be, you know, we've talked about physical health, mental health and stuff like that, but what are you most passionate about? Like what, you know, when you, like with work, we'll say, what are the stories that really, that you gravitate towards?
I still like anything to do with poverty alleviation, which I don't do a lot of, but we'll, you know, we'll get into it sometimes. But like, I love working with restaurants.
Yeah.
I love like Stephen Deere is one of my favorite humans. Just the way he approaches life is just like, both feet in. So, and you can't get help. You can't help but get swept up in that. And you know, anytime that we're working with some businesses that are really trying to elevate their brand so they can survive, because we're still in a tough spot, right?
Oh,
so,
yeah.
And if they trust us, then I'm all about getting passionate about that.
Yeah.
Right. Because they're putting their trust in us.
Yeah.
Or me. And I like to try and elevate their message somehow to get them more attention, maybe more clients if it's possible.
So what is it about that? It seems to me that you've really, and as long as I've known you, you love, you know, sharing the story of the people behind kind of brands. And I talk about this a lot where it's like, you know, people, I mean, maybe a lot of people don't put any thought into it, but I think there's a lot of people that if they see someone who owns a business, they think, well, that person's a millionaire.
Yeah.
And a greedy millionaire probably too. And that's almost never the case.
No.
I mean, people are generally business owners or entrepreneurs because they had an idea and they're trying to articulate that idea.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that you've always been the type of person who loves sharing like their stories.
Yeah.
So where did that come from? That idea of like, you know, I want to share the story of the person that started that brewery to the point where your boss is going, okay, no more stories in that vein. Or, you know, you wanting to share, whether it's an entrepreneur or restaurant owner, where did that kind of passion come from?
I can pinpoint it exactly, actually, because it was when I got to meet, Terry brought me to a hump day at Village.
Yeah.
And I got to meet all you guys.
Okay.
And then I get to meet all the brewers and I got to see the table that got passed around and the, you know, just the community that was built there. And I was like, oh, this is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the more you got to know the people, the more fascinated you were. I'm like, well, why did you pick this? Because we all know breweries don't make that much money.
Right, yeah.
But they're community people. They just want to give back. They create work.
Yeah.
And what they're doing is they're passionate about it. So I think the more I got to know each brewer, because I got to meet a lot, right?
Oh, yeah.
I got to meet, like, Graham. I got to meet Jimmy and all those guys and Colin and all those, you know, I can name them all.
Yeah.
I walked through Prairie Dog when they were bootstrapping the troughs.
Yeah.
And the drainage system.
I was in there a couple weeks ago at the wood in Prairie Dog, and I'm like, underneath this bar, it's plywood, and my name is signed on that.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was kind of, it was cool. And I made a point of just going and just meeting these guys. Like, I got to drink Dandy Dry.
Yeah.
The first, you know, that was fun. The first Dandy, so you get to know people, right? And then, you know, the first beer festival I went to, I'm sure we met. I didn't really get to know you until later, like at Hump Days and stuff. But, you know, the guys standing there with growlers, here, try this beer.
Yeah.
So it was fun, right? It was a really fun community. And it still is.
Absolutely.
So, and then, so I kind of take that approach now when I meet anybody that owns a business. I want to go, oh, who's all behind this?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. What's your passion?
And I think that's so cool because, like, they need it.
Yeah.
They need people sharing their story because there's something about when you share their story that is, you know, more, it resonates with people more than when someone's sharing their own story.
Yeah.
Right.
If they're talking about themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I always think of the Deerfoot in like the casino. We're fun. It's like, it's less cool when you have to tell people like, that you're cool. Fun. Yeah. Yeah. So no, I think what you're doing is really, really important there. On a personal level, what are you passionate about? I know you motorbike a lot. I don't know. Is that your passion? What's your passion?
It is in the summer. Yeah. I'm really like focused on my family.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like, you know, my wife and I have been together for 25 years and she puts up with, she tolerates me.
Yeah.
And she cares for me. She loves me. My daughter is like 31 and, you know, she's in Vancouver, but we talk on the phone every day. I get really passionate about that.
Yeah.
I got a niece and nephew in town and they're like really cool. They let me hang out with them. So anytime I can hang out with somebody that's in their 20s and 30s, I'm like, oh, this is cool. They haven't told me to get lost yet.
Yeah.
So I just and then friends, you know, your friend group becomes a bit smaller.
Yeah.
But your community is always there. I mean, like I know I can talk to you. I can text you and you'd listen to me every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not every day maybe, but.
Every week.
We check in. Like we check on each other, right? Because, you know, we have a long history. You know, I can name a bunch of guys in the, in the community still that I can just go text and hey, what's up?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And then I still talk to old reporters that I used to work with. Like, I'm going to have a coffee with Tony Ty next week.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So, how is he retired?
Oh, yeah. He retired quite a while ago.
How long ago did he retire then?
He retired young, like probably 5 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because did he go, was he on TV?
Yeah, he was
and then
like,
TV, did he go to radio after that?
No, he was radio at first.
Okay, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he was at CTV for a long time. Consumer guy.
I thought people were on radio because they had a face for radio. I didn't know you could go radio to TV.
Well, that's why I was never in front of a camera. No, Tony's great. He was a great community guy, right?
Yeah.
And people used to get scared if Tony Ty phoned him. Like, you were doing something wrong.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he was the consumer guy.
Oh, he was the guy, what are they called? Consumer.
Consumer watchdog.
Watchdog, yeah.
It's like Nancy Hicks. If she shows up at your house, you know you've screwed up.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny. So, a question I always like to ask, and I feel like I know the answer, but I used to think of are you passionate and what motivates you is kind of the same thing. But to me, motivation is, you know, some people, entrepreneurs, for example, a lot of entrepreneurs, they start out their careers almost with a chip on their shoulder and they're motivated out of like, I'll prove you wrong. I'll prove that I can do this. What motivates you? Like, you don't come across as a guy that's motivated by a chip on your shoulder. Like, what motivates you to kind of keep doing what you do?
I think I've got a bit of an imposter syndrome, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, I kept waiting. When I got every job I get, I'm like, oh, they're going to come up and find out about me.
Tap you on the shoulder.
Get out of here.
You're fucking.
So, honestly, I'm frightened to fall down.
Yeah.
And so I wake up and I go, okay, I was going to get through that. And I'm being forced into places now that I'm, you know, like awkward things I'm not comfortable doing. Not forced, but just I'm learning more about Facebook, which I didn't really want to. but I'm learning.
Yeah.
And I'm retaining.
Yeah.
I still type like an idiot.
Yeah. Like this.
Yep. And but you know, everyone like is amazed what I know on the digital side.
Yeah.
And I always say, well, I can do it. I have no idea how it works.
Yeah.
I know what AI is. How it works. Like, I did an AI the other day and I was like, what the hell is this?
You did it. What do you mean you did it?
Like, I put in a few words and it created this thing.
Like an image or what?
No, words.
Oh, okay.
Like 500 words.
That's hilarious. I was like,
whoa.
So,
that's like the Jetsons.
Yeah. Well, and I still haven't used a lot of. I don't want to. We used some for certain things, but it's I don't know. There's a weirdness to it.
Yeah.
So you, because I feel like a lot of people, they get to a certain point in their careers where they're like, here's what I know and I'm done learning. But you've never gotten to that. You kind of are like, you're like, okay, cool. I'll learn that. Which has allowed you to move, you know, from news in all those different areas to PR. Yeah. Because it, like the group that you're with specifically, leaning mostly towards females and a younger group. And so I remember when you first started there, I was just like,
what are they going to do with you?
Yeah. But like, you know, like it, that was what, 5 years ago?
Five years ago.
Yeah.
But I remember, so that's a good point, because if I would have been 2 years older when email came out, I might not have survived.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, this is, and I sent my first email. I go, where the hell is this going?
It's like having first fax. It's like someone else needs to have a fax machine.
There
for
was
that to
guys
be
2 years. There was guys 2 years older than me that were like, "I'm not doing any of that."
Yeah,
and I'm not using this BlackBerry.
Yeah,
and I was like, when I took the BlackBerry home, I was like, "Oh, now they can get us anytime."
Exactly.
Right? I'm going to be reading these things all day.
Yeah,
and you get into work, you knew what you were doing. That in the old days, you'd come into work and go, "What are we doing today?"
Yeah,
and now you know what you're doing before you get there.
Yeah.
So I think that speaks to a lot of the peace that we've lost, because you used to be able to disassociate, right? But now you walk into the office and you're like, you know what's coming up because you look at your calendar.
And as soon as you wake up, there's people that are like looking at it the second they wake up and they're on it. And that's, I think the reason why that's bad is for probably a million reasons, but we live in a world where we are, from the second we wake up, we're reacting to life and we're not. So that's why I intentionally have my phone downstairs, so that the first 10 minutes of my day isn't reacting to who texted me, who emailed me. It's like, okay, let me do my first 20 minutes, hour, whatever. And then I can go to my phone.
Yeah.
But like for years, it was like my phone was my alarm clock and it's just like, hey, I'm up. And then, oh fuck, what is this? Okay. Yeah. And you're already biting your nails going, this day is already, I'm not going to get done, you know?
I already know what's going on.
And
now there's all these Snap or WhatsApp chats. And I was like, the email wasn't enough.
And you know, to your point, you know, how you were saying, you know, 2 years, if you were 2 years older, and I'm sure you're joking to some degree, but if you were 2 years older, you never would have learned email. And then you never would have kind of led into the curiosity and what's next. I remember, you know, let's say this is 10, 15 years ago, watching the news and people bragging that they didn't know how to use a computer, that they didn't know. And I don't think they realized was like, they're basically, it'd be like bragging that you don't know how to read. Like you probably shouldn't, right? Like we got to a point where, does technology suck? It can suck, but you still need to be literate or else then you're really lost.
It does make our life easier.
Yeah.
But I know, it was just one of those things. I just went, I got to figure this out. And it was a young person. So I've always been, like I said, I always like being around younger people because they help, right? And this one young reporter came over and said, oh, you got to start Facebook. I was like, well, what for? So I started, I got into trouble right away. But Twitter, same thing. I had one of the first Twitter accounts in Calgary. Yeah. It was all realtors using it at the time, right?
Right.
But then it became a news thing. So, and then Instagram.
Is that where you became NewsBob?
That's where my first NewsBob account was on Twitter, because I was like, oh, I'm going to think of a fancy name here. But I didn't. I just used that.
That's
but
not
it worked,
terrible.
Right? It worked. Facebook, I stopped and started several times. And now I honestly started it up again to track one of our friends who was sick.
Yeah.
His wife would only update on Facebook. So I was like, okay, I got to keep an eye on this. Now I just keep it more of a, it's more of a laugh than anything. But it's just, it changed the whole world, Mark.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and it's good. I'm glad that you were able to kind of embrace that, because that allowed your career to evolve. That's for sure. So health-wise, you know, thinking about, well, for me, I'm always thinking about Explore84. And like I said, when I saw what you were doing, I was like, hey, I need to talk to this guy about, what do you do? Are there things that you do on a daily basis to kind of, you know, because one of the things that I think is sometimes we overcomplicate, you know, what we have to do for health on any way. I think, and it's just my own personal kind of thoughts, is that we should try to simplify things as much as possible. Mm-hmm. I think everything in life is like, the simpler is probably the better.
I agree.
Are there things that you do on a daily basis to kind of like check in on yourself and make sure that you're doing okay physically, mentally? And I don't know, it does spirituality play a role in your life?
Spirituality is always, it's always played, like I was raised in a Christian church.
Yeah.
Like the Church of England. I don't go to church, but when I go to something at a church, I know all the songs.
Yeah.
So whatever that is, right?
Yeah.
I think there's a bigger being that there's always something bigger than us.
Yeah.
And if you don't believe that, I think you're misguided.
Yeah.
Like there's always something that just makes us go, right? And makes us think things a certain way.
Yeah.
Why we don't kill people.
Yeah.
Why we're nice to people, right? That comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
So I believe there's a spirituality. I think you can find it out in the mountains.
Yeah.
You can find it wherever you're at peace. I don't think you need to go to a building with doors closed, but I mean, that's community. So that works for some people,
yeah,
right?
Totally.
So as long as you find your community and you find something that works for you and makes you feel good about yourself and the world and the things you do. Like I was always fascinated by yoga because it brought up a lot of emotions, right? Because mm-hmm. it's just different. I meet Buddhists and I'm like, oh, cool. I read that book that you recommended to me, The Buddha Walks Into a Bar. And
yeah.
I'm like, oh, this is cool.
I like
it's
that
very
one.
Simple. It just kind of simplifies everything,
totally.
Right?
Totally.
And like, so to your point, I agree. Simple is better when it comes to food, sleep, your home, whatever doesn't clutter your mind, because we got so much clutter in our mind right now.
Yeah.
So if you can just stop and go, oh, this is great. I just cooked this beautiful ribeye and I'm going to have a little bit of this and not overspice it and just simplify, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And we need that in our lives. And so I guess I am spiritual for sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you could put me into a denomination or anything, but
And
I respect those people that have that.
Oh, and I do too. And I'm not like, I'm not religious. I'm like you though too, because my kids go to
Hey everyone,
Catholic school.
Thanks for listening to the podcast today. To learn more about how you can join the Explore 84 community, visit us at explore84.com. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe and share it with others. Thanks again. Have an awesome day.
Represented, I guess, if that makes sense, because we're losing so much of, you know, I guess maybe what we took for granted as community, and maybe community just looks different to people nowadays, but, you know, whether it was media, you know, Ed Whalen back in the day, you know, you'd see him everywhere. They're just, when you said you were from Calgary, it felt like, you know, there was something to that.
Yeah.
And, you know, same thing if you were from Red Deer, just, and I think, you know, when all of a sudden, and it's little things, but, you know, when all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, we don't have local radio, we don't have local TV. With all of that, we're losing community and a sense of community. Yeah. And I think that we need to figure out how do we bring that back? And I think that's one thing that you've always been good at is just kind of like bringing people. Like I said, even when you go to the gym, like I know you're saying hi to everybody. Like you want to do that. And I think that we need that.
I think it's important.
Yeah.
It's not for everybody though, Mark. Like
community is
like, no meeting, like to easy to meet, easy to talk.
Oh yeah. No, but I'm reading a book right now. I can't remember what it's called, but it's basically how to talk to strangers. Cause I, like when I'm out and about, when I'm out hanging out, I'm not the guy that sits in a Starbucks line and talks to the guy beside me. I don't talk to people at the gym. I've seen the same people at the gym for however long. And like, we've never chatted where I see them chatting. So I'm trying to become more I'm trying to become more news Bobby in my life. But, you know, and it's like you said, it's not for everybody, but community needs, like everybody should feel like there's a place where they belong. You know what I mean?
I agree. And like you said this to me once, and I actually get a buzz off meeting people and the energy.
Yeah.
And you said, I just always assumed you were high.
Yeah. You're not?
No.
I was drunk.
I'd love meeting people
and
just finding out what they're, you know, what are you doing here?
And there's just that, like you have this natural curiosity about you, which I love. And I think that if people, you know, I was talking to a woman, an author, Kendall Hunter is her name. And I asked her about passion. And she said, I think passion is overrated. but curiosity is something. Yeah. She's like, because not everybody can be passionate about something, but you should be able to be curious about things. I like that.
Curiosity's great.
Yeah.
I've been talking to people and they're like staring at me, right? I go, oh, sorry, I just kicked into journalism.
Yeah.
So I just started asking you questions. And they're like, well, I'm just getting interviewed here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But no, I think that's kind of your... Yeah, it's your superpowers, your ability to do that. And so, yeah, I was, like I said, super excited when I saw that you were doing that journey, because I just think those are the things when I look at, you know, what keeps people going. Like, you have to have, you know, those daily habits, right? Like that one, okay, I got to get to the gym today. Just like that one little thing every day you wake up. Yeah. It's like, that's the thing. Because then, you know, talking about our friend Jim Button.
Yeah.
One of the things that you know, I would see with him is he had the daily habits, whether it was walking or whether it was, you know, even, you know, when you're on a cancer journey like that, it could be even just taking your medicine. Yeah. But you have these habits that you establish, and then you can have longer term goals. And it's just like when you get down on the day and you say, okay, what's this even all about? It's just like, well, these daily habits are going to make you healthier so that you can get to those longer term goals, right? So for Jim specifically, be like, I want to hang out with my friends in Fernie. Yep. And so I have to do this and I have to do this so that I'm physically capable of doing it. But I just think that everybody should have those, okay, what am I doing today?
Yeah.
And why am I doing it? So that I can do this in a month or 2 months or whatever. So
yeah, like I'm not stopping what I'm doing because my knees don't hurt anymore.
Right.
I can wear pants that are smaller.
Yeah.
I can bend over and not be out of breath. Like I feel better.
Yeah, totally.
And I had a bit of a blood sugar scare not too long ago.
Right.
But I was just eating too much sugar. I wasn't being mindful of what I was jamming into my stomach.
Totally.
And so it's just one of those things. And my doctor said, well, you might have diabetes. I said, I don't think so. I checked my family and everything.
Yeah.
So I just eliminated sugar.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it's down.
And that's the thing.
But that's just lucky, Mark. Like I could have had diabetes.
No. It is lucky. But we often were... We go to medication as the answer to the problems. And I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to tell. But I'm just saying, like, we should at least explore the fact that, well, maybe we should be more active. Maybe we should eat better.
Maybe I caused this.
Yeah, exactly. But it was awesome reconnecting with you. Oh, it's been too long.
It has been.
Maybe we'll sneak in a beer now that we've...
I'd go for a beer with you anytime.
Right? Awesome, man. Okay, take care. Hey everyone, thanks for listening to the podcast today. To learn more about how you can join the Explore 84 community, visit us at explore84.com. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe and share it with others. Thanks again. Have an awesome day.